Sean Steinman was working on his dissertation at the University of Hawaii at Manoa when Watermark Publishing approached his department looking for someone to write a coffee book. His advisor let him take a break on his dissertation to pursue being a coffee geek for the book. Now, the first edition of the Hawaii Coffee Book, A Gourmet's Guide from Kona to Kauai, was published in 2008, and an updated edition was recently released. Steinman says the book is an introductory guide to coffee and uses the islands as a case study. While much has changed in the local coffee industry, the issues of blending and labeling continues. Today, a product with 10% Kona coffee can call itself Kona coffee, but coffee farmers want to raise the minimum percentage. Steinman spoke with producer Jason Ubai.
Now, the blending conversation is very tricky. The short version is, as you said, you can have a coffee that you roast and sell. You have to have at least 10% of it being a local coffee to use that coffee's name, that origin. Then you can say 10% Kona blend. You have to use the word blend. So there's some rules, and then the size of the bag, the print, all this stuff. But 10% is not very much. Are you really tasting that 10%? People argue that this is really a marketing ploy. It dilutes our brand. It dilutes the quality. And we think this is wrong because very few industries allow someone to say 10% of this product is this thing. You know, it's like little cans of fruit juice that say fruit juice. And on the back, it says, 3% fruit juice. You know, thinking, it's not a good representation of what I'm getting. So for many years now, a group of farmers mostly in other folks have been trying to increase that from 10 to at least 51%, right? At least say that most of it is from this place. And I think most people can easily agree that's a super idea because then you get more in those bags and you support the farmers more and more of it's moving through and it's more transparent and honest, and that's really great. It's also way more expensive. And if it's way more expensive, fewer people might buy it. And if fewer people buy it, then we have more coffee. If we have more coffee, prices might go down. And there's all kinds of complex ripples that might happen if we increase that percentage. So from an ethical, idealistic standpoint, raising that percentage is a great thing. It's hard to argue with that. Economically, it might have effects that are damaging that we'll recover from eventually, but that transition process could be really tricky.
Exporting green coffee, what should people know about that issue?
Most of our coffee is probably exported, actually. There's no statistics that anyone offers. Individual companies, I could ask, but they're not going to probably tell me. Like the big players, we have some really big farms that account for about half our volume. And without understanding what's happening with them, it's hard to say. But you can look around the shelves and talk to roasters, you can see the vast majority of our green coffee is leaving. And it's really great because coffee is a sort of product that has a shelf life once it reaches its last stage, the roasting stage. So if I were a farmer, I'd rather somebody in Germany be roasting it themselves than me roasting it and shipping it to them. Even though I lose money in the process, I have a better chance of maintaining my relationship. So this is a big industry for us. It's actually Hawaii's second most valuable crop. So exporting coffee of various sorts is really important. The green coffee exporting is not such an issue, except, of course, we want to protect it, right? We want people to know that it is from Hawaii and not actually from Panama. So to really ensure there's no chemical way we can ensure it. So it's about legislation and paperwork and tracking and integrity. So a farmer who really wants to ensure that the receiver gets what they're asking for can ask the Department of Agriculture, will you certify my coffee and check for quality and check for things and give me a stamp that says, look, this bag is from Hawaii. And that's how a buyer can ensure what's going on. There are variations to how this works and what grades are being sold and what it can be labeled as in terms of grade. And even to use the word Hawaii has a certain minimum that has to be met for the quality. But very infrequently do we hear problems about exporting in itself. We do hear problems about exporting maybe something that isn't what's supposed to be in the bag or roasting something that's supposed to be from Hawaii that maybe isn't. And a lot of laws we have are designed to help prevent these things from happening, from our coffees being mislabeled, but they don't prevent them. They just enable the people who make the laws to have the people who enforce the laws enforce them, right? If there's no law that says you're doing something bad, then you can do it, not be in trouble for it. So a lot of these laws exist so that we can catch somebody, but they have to be caught and they have to be enforced. And it's hard. It's very hard because there's no chemical means by which we can prove any of these things. So it's all paper trails.
I think the first Kau'u Coffee Festival was around the time period that you published the first book. So is any region kind of gaining more popularity? Any trends towards different places? I know Kona coffee has also been hit with the coffee boar.
What's changed in Hawaii coffee in the last 11 years? Is that the question?
Yeah. Yes.
how we talk about regions in terms of change is really not that important. What's really interesting is the number of farms that have shifted. As you mentioned, you know, and when I wrote the first book, we had no serious coffee pests and diseases. Then in 2010, a serious one came, the coffee berry borer, and that was really tricky to deal with for several years. And I predicted that we were going to see a huge loss of farms on the Big Island and that people are going to give up because this new challenge is going to be too expensive and too difficult. And I was incredibly wrong. We don't have great historical details of the whole process, that whole time, but we have seen a big increase in the number of coffee farms we have in the state, largely in Kona, Big Island area. So something magical is happening. It's either driving people here or romanticizing people here or giving people the belief that they can make a go at being a coffee farmer and it's going to be a satisfying and successful piece of their lives. And that's great because we want to have lots of coffee here. People like our coffee. And we like our coffee. So we have a lot more farms. I wouldn't say any area has changed a whole lot, aside from some increase, but the state doesn't keep really good records of how many people are where doing what. And that was because the state didn't have enough money to track these things anymore. So a lot of the numbers that I think about for coffee are educated guesses based on what I've heard from other people, based on what I can see. Everyone's doing better. Some regions are always going to be small, like Hamakua on the Big Island. It's a great place to grow coffee, but just not a lot of people seem to be doing it, and that could be for all sorts of reasons. I can say what's changed a lot since I wrote the first book was how farmers are thinking about quality and how to farm, how to process their coffee. Since Hawaii became a name in coffee that wasn't just Kona, so we're talking early 2000s, late 1990s. You know, people always talked about Kona, then it was Hawaii, and Hawaii was always a specialty coffee grower. Like, we grew things that were good and delicious and special and notable, and you should be able to charge more for it, which we always have. Well, specialty became our way of approaching coffee, or the identity we wanted to have. But within the idea of specialty coffee, you have this huge range of flavor experiences. And if you want to hit the really far and bizarre, complex, interesting in the cup, not really coffee end, you've got to do new and different things that people have been doing. So when I first wrote this book, people weren't doing very much at all. It was very basic growing and processing coffee. Now, 11 years later, all sorts of farmers are doing all sorts of things to change the flavor and the experience of the coffee they're producing. There's been a real increase, even a shift in who we want to market our coffees to, what we want them to be like, and what makes us proud as a farmer community. That being said, people still grow and produce coffee that is very similar to what it may have been like 20, 30, 40 years ago. Not because they don't want to be on that cutting edge, but because they want something different. They like something different. So we have a much bigger range of what Hawaii is producing because we have maybe a bigger range of what farmers exist, or maybe because, you know, evolution is about becoming many things to see what works, and we're in this great diversifying phase. As it might not come as a surprise, because I'm, you know, I wrote the book on Hawaii coffee, right? It's right here. It's why we're here talking about this. I'm a big proponent of Hawaii coffee and the industry and supporting the industry. And I've had businesses over the years that sold local coffee to consumers and non-local coffee to consumers. And if there's one thing that revising this book has made me realize, it's just how important it is to support our local farming community. There's obviously a big story there, talk about that, but in this instance of coffee, it's still really important. If we want it to be an industry that's resilient against world politics or world changes or who knows what might happen, we have to be able to support ourselves. We should be drinking as much of our local coffee as we can. It's absolutely more expensive, but there's a connection you have to it, and there's a story to it, and there's the support your neighbor to it. There's all sorts of reasons why we should be engaging more with our local coffee industry. If there's one thing I'd want anyone to walk away from, which is, you know, if you don't drink local coffee at all, add in a cup a week. It's $2 or $3 more more than maybe the cup you were buying before. Probably not even that much. Those small purchases, asking for it in restaurants and cafes, is the most powerful thing you can do to help our industry.
It also tastes pretty good most of the time.
It does taste pretty good.
That was Sean Steinman, a coffee consultant and author of the Hawaii Coffee book, A Gourmet's Guide from Kona to Kauai.